Roll sound, please. Roll sound.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston. ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 2 hours in the books, 1 hour still to go, 60 minutes of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Barry got a little early weekend as we're hoping that some R&R will get him over the final stages of this never-ending sickness he's had basically since Thanksgiving. Nick is here, I'm here, and Fred Fowler graciously filling in for Barry, taking us up till 4 when he and AJ and Aaron will take the blitz all the way till 7 right here on ESPN 97.5. We kicked around a little bit the NFL, talking about the Cowboys situation. Before we get into the actual wild card weekend and some of those things and your takes on some things, the other thing that I thought was interesting was they were talking about the Cleveland situation now that Dorsey's gone. And they were saying that if Josh McDaniels the ideal situation would be where if they now say coach first and then he gets to pick the GM, that Texans fans would be pretty familiar with the name that might be on the list for GM if McDaniels got the job, because he would go and take Nick Caserio. And Nick Caserio, who if he came to the Texans now would have no money to spend, no draft picks to use, but a job with a title. Or he could go to Cleveland and set up shop with a Josh McDaniels and set up, you know, Patriots, what, East, and you know, have a lot to work with.
Yeah, I don't know what gets in a person's head as far as what they want, but let's not pretend like Cleveland's a good setup right now. Do you really trust Baker Mayfield as your quarterback?
That's the biggest thing, because otherwise I think it's a good setup with the roster is full of quality talent. The big question mark is the quarterback.
It's also full of a lot of locker room problems, which they've brought in and created. And it's full of a lot of head cases, which is why they were such a mercurial team all year long, where if they were, you know, they're classic front runners, and it starts with the quarterback because he's such an emotional dude. So,
but how much is okay? Because I'm with you, and it's what you can call it. It's almost like the Vince Young path, where you have this great rookie season, and then you have a complete sophomore slump that never goes away. And Mayfield experienced that. But how much of that goes on Kitchens? Because they said it was so disjointed from the play calling to the locker room. He had lost total control, and it was all over the place. I read an article this morning where his offensive coordinator was out there bashing him to other coaches throughout the league, game in, game out, because he was supposed to be calling plays by midseason, and that didn't happen. And so as much as I want to crap on Baker Mayfield for having more endorsement deals than touchdown passes in a lot of ways, I want to know how much of it was Kitchens and how much of it was Baker.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it was Kitchens, but let's start with something else. Are we really sold that Josh McDaniels knows what the bleep he's doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, has he learned from what he didn't do right in Denver? Because he had a shot at this.
And which one of these Belichick guys who gets to run everything has had success?
We mentioned Romeo, and that didn't work out as a head coach. You mentioned McDaniels. Charlie Weiss was another one that as Belichick's OC in New England, he couldn't do anything wrong. And then he did wrong at Notre Dame, and he never got another gig.
And Eric Mangini. I mean, there's all kinds of names that they've trotted out there. I just think
Bill O'Brien. Oh,
yeah. Well, Bill O'Brien, same thing. What? So, and I don't know if Nick Caserio is anything special.
I don't either.
So, if he winds up in Cleveland, good on him. If he winds up in Houston, great. I mean, it's hard to judge a guy like that when Belichick's shadow is on everything. It's the same thing with assistants. Yeah, they do a great job. How much of that is him? Obviously, a lot. And when you talk about the front office, when you go and look at their draft picks, they've had mixed results. I mean, they haven't. Yeah, they got Tom Brady at 199, you know, in 2000. Right. In 2000. But a lot of their picks haven't worked out. And, you know, so I don't know who now they're great at signing street free agents and finding guys like a Landon Roberts, who's become such a good player for him. And maybe that's what he does. I don't know. But I don't know if Nick Caserio is the answer to anything.
I don't know.
And you know, I'm not necessarily against what the Texans have done in their front office if they make good decisions. And I think it's been a mixed bag so far. I think I had no problem with giving up two picks to get a starting left tackle. I have no problem with that at all.
I didn't either, Fred, but at the same time, that starting left tackle with the contract coming up, part of that deal should have been an extension for Laremy Tunsil so that you don't have to worry about the fact that you make that deal, you give up those draft picks, and he can walk on you.
He can't walk on you. He's under contract next year. You can franchise him the year after that.
But they're going to overpay.
They'll get a deal. You got to overpay. I mean, it's his turn to get paid. That's going to happen. He's going to be the highest paid tackle in the league because it's his turn until it's the next guy's turn. So, to me, the price is the price. You're to pay a premium for that guy, not just in draft picks, but you're going to have to pay him a contract. They will, and they'll get it done. I think the whole, would you have liked to have had a deal in place? Sure, but I don't think it's that pressing because you got another year. And then you got a franchise tag after that if you need it. So,
I like some of the moves he made. I'm with you on the Miami trade in terms of what filling positions of need with quality players. Stills has been very, very big for them with Fuller's consistent injuries. Tunsil obviously solidified the left tackle. But again, with the price you pay, and then you look at the price, what you gave up for Clowney, you didn't get what everybody thought you would get if you're going to trade him instead of just franchising him and keeping him around, and he could have helped.
No, the Clowney deal was dumb.
Duke Johnson, you overpaid, but a guy that helped.
Did you? I mean, what third round picks have worked out for them? Well, he's already better than any third round pick that they've had, not named Justin Reed. And so,
I was going to say Reed was a good one. And, if you go back to the Rick Smith era, there's no doubt that the third round picks were complete failures. But of recent years, when they've had a pick, and when have they had a pick since they got rid of Rick Smith to be able to say that? But overall, when you look at the moves that he's made, the things that bother me too are like, why are you giving Whitney Mercilus?
Okay, now that I think is the better criticism. Why are you paying Whitney Mercilus this kind of contract?
Why is Martin the second highest paid center in football?
Nick Martin is a pet.
Right.
He's an O'Brien pet. So why are you paying those two guys? And that's because you didn't need to. Well, Mercilus, if you're going to keep him, you had to do something. But man, for a guy who's at best a mediocre pass rusher, and he's better when J.J. Watt's in.
But I was going to say, classic scenario of, hey, go out, test the market, bring back your best offer. We still like you. We still want you. We'll talk when you get that offer. It's like when Clint Capela was a free agent with the Rockets. Look, Clint Capela wanted max money, and they said, you know what? Go out and find us a deal. And if you have an offer on the table for that kind of money, then we'll talk. Until then, or until you get an offer like that, when you're ready to talk about money we're willing to give you, then you save money. I just think that they overspent for both of those guys, and that's a problem when you're so cap-strapped.
Yeah, I think that's a fair – well, they're not really cap-strapped, though. I think that's a big misnomer.
Well, you got Watson's deal coming up.
Yeah, but they've Tunsil. They're going to have over $40 million. And when you talk about – Tunsil's making, $10 million, I believe, this year. So, yeah, you're going to pay him $15 or $16. That's only $5 or $6 million more. So it's not like you're starting from scratch with Laremy Tunsil and paying $15 a year like you would a free agent. You're going to be paying him $5 or $6 more than what you are, and that's not that big of a deal. The Watson contract is going to take a big chunk up, and that's probably going to be about $30 million. But if you look at what they can do, and we went over this on our show in detail the other day, so I don't want to bore people by doing it again. Mm-hmm. But they've got plenty of cap room. They're going to have room. If they want to bring back Bradley Roby, they'll be able to do it. They also will be able to restructure some contracts, including J.J. Watt, if they want to do that.
That has to happen.
They've also got some guys that if they want to cut them loose, that they can get some cap room. They've got plenty. They're not cap-strapped. I think that's they're not going to be one of those teams with $100 million in cap room, but they're going to have room to do what they need to do. And getting Watson locked up, I think, is going to be the primary thing.
You think 30? I think it's going to go up 35-ish.
Well, I know, but so he's making $5 million. So I'm just saying that's going to cost you $30 million more than what you're paying. So, I mean, you always have to factor in what a guy's already making.
Right.
When you add that to the cap, because that's the thing. I hear people say that, that's $35 million against the cap. Yeah, it's going to be $35 million against the cap, but it's only $30 million hit based on what you're paying him now. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing with Tunsil. It's like, oh, boy, you're going to pay him $15 or $16 million. Well, you're paying him $5 or $6 million more than what you're paying him now. So, I mean, because that's already on the books. And by the way, the cap's going to be over $200 million this year. So they're going to have more room than even what people think.
It is. And the reason why I say it is because, like you mentioned, Roby, well, they got a sweetheart deal on a 1 year with him. But now the fact that he's lived up to billing and more, you're going to have to pay him to keep him. Other teams know he's out there too. And he's really good. And that's the kind of guy that you're going to have to pay to keep, as well as some of the other guys that we just went over with. So they do have their own that they're going to have to keep as well. And that's going to obviously take a significant portion of what they have.
Yeah, but there's really not that many guys that they have to make a decision on. Like Carlos Hyde, you're going to have to make a decision on. I would be more than happy to say, see, I'm not paying you $5 million a year.
As opposed to, I think you keep him and say goodbye to Miller.
Well, they're doing that anyway. He's off the books next year.
Right.
His contract's up. So I see no point in bringing him back. But I'm not going to pay Carlos Hyde $5 million. You got him off the scrap heap right before the season. You can do that again. Running backs aren't that important. And
wow, I would hang on to him for five a year. I think that's almost a bargain based on what he gave you this year.
Not for a running back, no. Running backs are useless. I mean, they really are. I mean, unless you have a Zeke Elliott or a guy like that, these guys are all interchangeable. And you know, yeah, he's a good fit for him. If you can bring him back at $3 million a year, sure. But I'm not paying him five or six, and I'm not giving him a multi-year deal. He's had two good years his entire career. You don't think you can find those
guys? That's another classic example, though, of go out and see what you can get and then come back and talk to me and we'll tell you what we're willing to offer you. And then if you can meet in the middle, you're good. And if you can't, then you, like you said, then you let them go move on and you hope there's someone else that's out there that you can get to fill the bill.
Yeah, you can. There's guys you can find. There's no question. But just looking at the next season for the Texans against the cap, now that Merciless has his deal. So I guess, well, technically it's 2020 now because you're still going to have some dead money from Aaron Colvin and people like that. But J.J. Watt's cap number is going to be $15 million. You can cut him if you want with no dead money and you'd save $15 million under the cap. More likely, you extend him over two or three years for a lower cap number for this year. And, you know, Merciless now is going to be a $12 million hit next year. Tunsil's 10-3, so you get his deal done for 15 or so, which is about what a Pro Bowl left tackle is going to go for. So that's going to cost you $5 million. Going in, you've got $59 million in cap space, and that's before you make any moves. And you can get rid of some people, too, and clear some room if you want to. Vernon Hargraves is a $9 million hit.
That's where I'm saying
you can get rid of $9 million.
The overall job that Bill O'Brien has to do, and I like some of the players he's brought in, but part of that deal, whether you do it yourself or you have your capologist do it, but they haven't done a great job in terms of juggling that capology to make sure that they can.
I see. I disagree with that. I'm kind of thought I was just explaining why they've got cap room to work with.
Well, you were making your point is just the fact that when you say you got to bring these guys in, we got to pay these guys, we got to find this money here, and yet they've overpaid. They overpaid Martin. They overpaid some guys too. I don't have the confidence in Bill O'Brien to juggle all those things and be able to make those things happen.
Well, I don't think it's just Bill O'Brien doing it. They've got a pretty good cap guy over there who's responsible for that. Yes, did they overpay Merciless? In my opinion, absolutely. Did they overpay Nick Martin? Mm-hmm. Yeah. By maybe $2 million per guy, maybe three each. So there's $6 million against the cap that you shouldn't have to do. But the reality is they've got room under the cap to work with. They're going to be able to, you know, Watson's going to handcuff you a little bit, but that's what happens when you have a franchise quarterback. But, it's just not correct to say that they haven't handled the cap well because they're in a good spot and they're going to be able to pay these guys. And they've already got Hopkins under contract, which I think is almost a bargain for what he makes. You can jettison Will Fuller next year and have $10 million on your cap to play with. I mean, there's plenty of guys you can move. There's plenty of guys you can restructure because there's some key guys. Now, Duke Johnson's making 4.1. That's a little high for me. Maybe you renegotiate with him and get that down to a more manageable number because I don't think anybody's going to go pay him $4.1 million as much as I like the trade and I like what he's brought. But you're going to have Tytus Howard for $2.7 million. You're going to have Brennan Scarlett at $2 million. You've got Gary and Conley at $1.8 million, and he's under contract for a couple more years. Lonnie Johnson at $1.1 million. You've got a lot of guys, Justin Reed at $1 million.
That's a
bargain. These are guys who are, yeah, now you're going to have to pay DJ Reader. That's another guy that you're going to have to pony up some money for, and I think they should. But the reality is they've got enough quality guys on low-level contracts. Now, where it'll be a problem, 3 or 4 years down the road when they haven't been able to draft for a couple years to replace some of these other cats.
Depth and right.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I mean they've got room with the cap to play with. The question is, are they going to make the right decisions? I don't know if Nick Caserio is going to make better decisions than the group that's already there. I just don't know.
Okay.
I think Dorsey got a raw deal in Cleveland. I'd like to see him here. But
we talked about it yesterday. I mean, look, you can say that he absolutely has egg on his face for Freddie Kitchens, but when you look at all the players that he brought in and the moves that he made to make that team better and bring him from the depths of hell, it's tough to say that he deserved the fate that he got.
But, you know, getting back to the running back thing, though, I'm never going to invest a lot in a running back unless I've got one of about three guys in the league. And otherwise, you can go find them.
I get it. Your point's made in the fact that they overpaid for Zeke, but he was the fourth highest running back, performance-wise, his fourth best running back in the league. But overall, if you get a guy like Carlos Hyde, and I don't know if it goes as much as five a year, and like I said, he can test the market, but the fact that you brought him in off the scrap heap on a team that was probably going to trade him, and he's panned out so well for you in a year's time, it's tough to find it, that lightning in a bottle every year if you're saying that they're a dime a dozen running backs.
Running back, I'm not saying they're a dime a dozen. I'm saying you can find another Carlos Hyde. Okay. He's out there. And they've done a pretty good job of finding guys like that. And so, you know, I wish I had a draft pick because I think there's some really good ones in this year's draft. But, you know, and Carlos
anybody
Hyde.
Anybody want Will Fuller for a third?
I don't think anybody's paying you anything for Will Fuller.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just, as long as you're right one way or the other and he's somewhere else next year, I think I'd be okay with that based on his productivity level and how long he's on the field.
I think that what we heard from O'Brien about him after that last game pretty much tells me that unless he's a big factor in the playoffs, you're not going to have Will Fuller to kick around next year. And, you know, that's okay. You know, Kenny Stills, don't have anything beyond that, but
Kenny Stills was a hell of a pickup because of Will Fuller.
Listen, I think Carlos Hyde's been a good addition. Running backs have a very short shelf life. I'm not giving him a long deal, and I'm not paying him a ton of money. I mean, that's just, to me, there's enough of those guys out there.
There you have it. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. A reminder, 3:30, Sarah Barshop, beat writer for the Texans for ESPN, will join us as we break down the Bills and the Texans and get you a preview for that big one tomorrow at around 3:30 at NRG Stadium. But Fred Frauer's in for Barry Laminack. It's Nick and myself as we continue to roll on with the final hour of the show. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
G'day, mate. This is Sam Windsor of the Houston Sabercats. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back flying through the final hour of the show. If you're just tuning in, Barry, a little bit under the weather. AJ Hinch Hoffman came in and took the ball from Barry on the mound and went to the pen and brought in Fred. And Fred is finishing strong, doing a marathon. He's going to finish up the second half of our show, and then he's going to do the blitz with AJ and Aaron up until 7. So we're happy to have him here. Kicking around some things. Nick, you've been awfully silent since Barry departed. And
yeah, well, Fred, you guys were rolling, so I was absorbing everything.
Yeah, he was still arguing with me on the break.
Was he?
So, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
what we do. I don't call it arguing. I call it a quality discussion.
A debate. It's an off-air debate.
Yeah, that's why what we do is that it's not arguing if we're just doing it for sports radio.
Yeah.
Now, I want to get you into this conversation, sure, though, Nicholas, because this is right down the alley for you two. Did you guys see that Illinois' first day of legal recreational marijuana generated $3.2 million in sales for more than 77,000 transactions, including one by the second most powerful official in the state? There were 77,128 transactions on New Year's Day with the new law legalizing marijuana in Illinois for recreational purposes, including the senior advisor to Governor J.B. Pritzker on cannabis control. So it looks like it's a hit right away in Illinois.
Am I crazy to say that number seems small, Fred?
It does seem small.
3.2 million?
Yeah. In one day. I mean, that does seem light. Well, my first thought is, kind of wish the wife had taken the job in Chicago last year now. You know, I'd like to be someplace where it's legal. But realistically, well, that, and I'm kind of curious now, that's going to take away a lot of episodes from Chicago PD. If they don't have weed guys to go after anymore. But the one thing, and we talked about this on the show yesterday, and Nick, I'd be curious to get your take on it. What always worries me when a state starts legalizing is how often they don't have enough product and how fast they run out.
Yeah.
We saw it in Nevada, Canada, right after they legalized it. My first trip up there, I'm all excited. Not that I ever had any problems getting it when I was up there before, but I'm so excited, and I go to the dispensary in Regina. Make all the jokes you want.
I know, we've heard this.
Closed, because they didn't have enough product.
No supply.
No supply. And this was, I mean, about 3 weeks after they legalized.
Yeah.
And so it takes a while to catch up, because you have to have people growing it. I bet you're going to have the same thing in Illinois.
Is Regina the Kuntz of Canada?
Yeah, yeah, that's, you know, I've got a place in Kuntz and a place in Regina, all right?
So, all right, so
we've done the jokes, believe me.
You bring up a good point, because they said dispensaries were reporting long lines in the hundreds as people waited outside in the cold in Illinois to make sure that they got the product. But with sales continuing through the weekend, they have to start worrying about that.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's a, like, Nevada, it took about 6 months for them to catch up in terms of demand and the amount of product that they had. But that's always one of those things. I still think that we have a better chance of having legal weed in Texas than we do legal casinos.
You think so?
I believe that, yes. And I also think we have a better chance of having sports betting than those. Now, we might not get any of them, all right? But the reason is, you don't have, like, Louisiana's not doing it yet. You don't have competition from the neighboring states that want all our money. And you do with casinos, and they dump. Go look at your politicians sometimes and look at how much money they're collecting from out-of-state casinos, so that we'll never have them. But they're not. There is no weed around us yet.
No, there is. That is an interesting point. I would have assumed, but I'm not a gambler as much as a gambler, but I would assume gambling would have been legal first, only because of the fact that Louisiana has gambling legal. But I didn't consider the politicians taking all this out-of-state money. I just assumed gambling would be legal first in Texas, only because of Louisiana.
Yeah, it's to me, it's the exact opposite, because there's too much money for any politician to be motivated to let us vote on whether or not we want more gambling. So I've given up on that. To me, it doesn't matter, because now that they found a poker loophole, really all I do is poker and horses anyway. But I think for the people, it would be, you know, I think the people who want it, we should at least get a chance to vote on it. But I think sports betting might happen before that, because, again, we don't have the neighboring states with it yet that are going to put in a bunch of, oh, we don't want, you know, we don't want Texas getting it, because that's going to cost us a whole bunch of money.
That's where I was. I just thought sports betting in Texas would be the first. I thought it would be overwhelmingly supported, and that would be a big deal for people here to have that. I'm surprised that it hasn't gone through yet.
Yeah, and it's not really on the radar, but I bet it happens before casino gambling.
There is definitely validity in your point, because when you consider all the CBD locations that are around town right now, a lot of these guys are just investing in CBD locations, and a lot of them are not necessarily making that much money, but they're hoping that it does get legal in the event it does get legal. That way it's a seamless transition from making their store solely CBD and having THC products as well. So I think there is validity. I just assumed, because of the revenue, obviously there's revenue streams that come along with weed. I would imagine gambling brings more money, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, that's, but I think the one thing to your point with the CBD shops is, I do have some friends who are invested in that business and long term hope that there'll be legal dispensaries and legal areas to grow and everything else. They believe that it will eventually get through the legislature. Now, having said that, being involved in the gambling business and horse racing and everything for 25 years, I've been hearing for 25 years how they're going to get more gambling in this state. So,
never happens.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm afraid here in Texas. I'm afraid it's, I always say another 2 years, 3 years. I stop saying it, because I feel like it's been 6 years of me saying another year, another year. And I just don't know when it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, I if I were a betting man, and
you are,
I would list what would happen in order. Keeping in mind, I don't believe any of them will happen, because I just think there's certain things in the state that people are going to continue to resist for reasons that I don't understand. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of stuff I love about this state, but as far as I'm concerned, I'd like legal weed. I like the fact that Houston's decriminalized it, and I'd like more gambling, but if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. I go to Vegas enough, and Louisiana's
means for you to get it done anyway.
Yeah. But if I were to put an order on things, I would say marijuana has the best chance, followed by sports betting, and then casino gambling would have the lowest chance. Not that I think any of them will happen.
That's right. So crazy to me, considering they decriminalized it. But
so, and the final numbers just for you guys, 3.2 million on first day in Illinois, 3.1 in Michigan, and in Colorado on their first day, January 4th, 2014, 1 million. So it was actually a pretty high number.
Yeah, but they did, Colorado over the first month did, and they had some of the same problems. They didn't have, they had lines, they didn't have enough product. I think they wound up doing something ridiculous, like 40 million the first month, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I just thought that number was low for, especially for a city like Chicago, as big as it is. You know?
Yeah, there you go. And especially as cold as all get out, and you want to do something, take your mind off of how bad it is. I grew up in that area. You know that. You know cold weather. People are looking for stuff to do where they can stay inside and have fun.
No, I don't mind sitting outside and smoking in cold weather either.
Because but believe me, if they have a choice, people would rather just get some weed and chill out. All right, if you're looking for a place to chill out this weekend, look at Wild Card Weekend and watch some sports. You don't want to do it all yourself at your place of residence and you want to get away. There's 5 Houston area locations for Twin Peaks, one of them near you, and definitely they're going to treat you right because first and foremost, you know the Twin Peaks girls are beautiful and they're going to wait on your table and they're going to take care of you. And on top of that, it's made from scratch menu items. It's the appetizers. It's the main courses. It's just fantastic food made right there in their kitchen, and they have 29-degree draft beers at the bar. The thermostat is right there above the bar, digital readout. You can see how ice cold and refreshing they're going to be, and they'll keep them coming. While you just decide to dictate which screens get which games in which sports you want at any one of the locations. Great TVs, safe environment, fantastically clean, and then you can say, I want to watch NBA basketball on that channel, college basketball on that channel, NFL football on that channel, and maybe soccer on the other channel, and they're going to set up all the screens in front of you, so you just feel like you're at home with all of this just oozing sports entertainment, food and beverage right in front of you. It's like I always tell you, if you're going to get out of the house, there's only one place to go because they got everything covered from you. It's eats, it's drinks, it's scenic views. If you're going anywhere this weekend, make it Twin Peaks.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Final half hour of The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on an F Yeah Friday. F for football, Texans playing, playoffs. What better person right now, as we normally bring her in right before a Texans game, to talk about your favorite team and this big matchup with the Buffalo Bills than Sarah Barshop, ESPN's NFL national beat writer covering your Houston Texans. You can follow her at Sarah Barshop on Twitter. She's also on Instagram, but you can also follow her columns, which are fantastic, just by clicking on them while you get onto her Twitter account. Interesting, Sarah. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you spending some time with us, by the way, as we get ready for the playoffs. Your latest article is one that we just kind of were kicking around here in the studio because I said, look, when you're talking about the GM position, and we were going back the pros and cons of Bill O'Brien, but I had thrown out the name Nick Caserio again saying, look, now you're getting teams that are going to hire the coach first and then hire the general manager like in Cleveland. And if Josh McDaniels is in play, obviously the Patriots way leads you to believe that if you're Nick Caserio, why wouldn't you take a job where you probably have more draft picks and you probably have a little bit more cap money than you would if you would consider going to Houston? And now you're saying that Dan Graziano at ESPN is out there kind of hinting that there's going to be a restructuring within the football operations with Bill O'Brien and such in the offseason. Why don't you fill the people in a little bit?
Yeah, I read a story today and I thought that was really interesting. But because I long thought, like you guys, that if you're a general manager, especially Caserio, and you want to come in and you say, the Texans don't have a first-round draft pick the next 2 years. They pretty much decided they're going to spend the money on Hunsell and Deshaun Watson this offseason. There's not a lot of cap room or flexibility there to really build your team, right? The core is here. Bill O'Brien made those trades this offseason or right before the season, and this team is kind of what it is. Obviously, there'll be some moves they make, you know, in free agency, there's a draft, but I just think, to me, Houston is not really an attractive position for someone to come in, especially because Bill O'Brien has now gone through two general managers, which is not a common thing. So, to me, it'll be interesting. If it is Caserio, then he just must really want to work with O'Brien, and they really think the two of them have something that they can work together. But I also don't think it would be the worst thing if someone did come in and help Bill O'Brien. You know, Graziano reported that O'Brien would still be in charge of personnel, which it sounds like it's something he wants. So if you just have someone to help him out and kind of balance the responsibilities, that's probably a good thing for the Texans.
Where are you on the latest of the two deals that were signed? Obviously, Martin got paid first, and we were talking about second highest paid center in the game now. And then Whitney Mercilus gets taken care of, sixth highest paid outside linebacker in football. I just feel like they should have waited, maybe let them test the market before committing that kind of money and making that kind of commitment. What were your thoughts on it?
You know, Bill O'Brien feels very strongly that he'd rather reward his players that he has now than have to how he feels overspend on the open market. And I think I agree that, you know, Mercilus could have probably gotten, I think he could have gotten more in the open market. I think he wanted to be back in Houston. And so they're happy to work on this deal. But I think that the way Bill O'Brien's mindset and the way he wants to build his team is to keep the guys he knows he likes. And so I think that's kind of the mindset. And then you talk about the next couple of guys that are up. That's DJ Reader, who will be a free agent this offseason unless they tag him or, you know, re-sign him for the season. Zach Cunningham is coming up soon. So I think there's going to be a lot of decisions the Texans make on their own guys, and I think that's kind of how Bill O'Brien wants to handle it, even if it means not waiting, letting the guy hit the open market and then coming back maybe at a cheaper deal.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you a question about O'Brien in particular, because a lot of guys script, say, 15 plays at the beginning of the game. Obviously, that's been an issue for them all year. Is O'Brien a guy who scripts plays, or does he just kind of go out there and try to adjust to what he sees on the field?
From what I've been told, is they script some, but it's mostly to see how the opponent reacts so they can see how they can call the rest of the game. Obviously, scoring is a priority, and it's not like they're just running these plays to like say, "Oh, this drive doesn't matter. We just want to see." But I think that first drive gives them a lot of insight how their opponent's playing them, and so they look at it as like we're going to script it and obviously try and score, but we also want to prepare for the rest of the game.
So almost like overkill, we've heard a ton about J.J. Watt coming back this weekend in the game Saturday against the Bills. Bill O'Brien says you're going to see him on the field quite a bit. Romeo Crennel said he's obviously going to be in pass rush situations early and then get him in more. Some of it can be coach speak, making the Bills have to prepare a little harder and worry a little bit more. What's your gut feeling on how much we see J.J. and how effective he can be?
See, that's interesting to me because when we talked to J.J. right on Christmas Eve, right when he first started practicing, he said, you know, it probably is not the right thing for me to come into that game and play the whole, you know, the whole time. It's probably going to be limited. But after talking to Bill O'Brien yesterday, I got the sense that J.J. Watt's, I mean, he said quite a bit, but just the way he said it to me, was like, J.J. Watt's going to play. And I do think he will be effective. When does J.J. Watt come, you know, he may be rusty after he's come back from injuries, but I still think his rusty is still probably the best pass rusher on this team. So I think he will make an impact, and, you know, hats off to him for playing with the chance to re-tear it, because not a lot of guys would do that. And so because of that, because he's come back on this accelerated timeline, it's also meant a lot to his teammates. Everyone I've talked to in the locker room said the fact that he was willing to come back and work that hard and risk this re-injury just shows the kind of teammate he is and the type of player he is.
Sarah, one of the things that I'm curious about in this matchup is the Bills don't do a lot on offense that hurts the Texans, like the tight ends and throwing to the backs out of the backfield. But one thing they do have is a quarterback who can run, and the Texans have really struggled with that really during the whole Bill O'Brien era. What do you think they do to keep Allen from being effective taking off and running?
You know, that's actually been the question that's kind of been asked to the players in the locker room this week. And I agree. I think that'll be the key to the game. I don't know, because they haven't had success. Like, I think they've tried to stop running quarterbacks this season. And like you said, during Bill O'Brien's tenure, it's nothing they've had success with. Maybe J.J. Watt being back helps. If you have some pass rush, maybe that helps a little bit. But I think that's definitely going to be a key area the Texans need to worry about this in this game.
So you look at the game itself. Buffalo's defense is very staunch unit. They've been playing really good football all season long. We know that they like to throw a lot of zones in the secondary, and Deshaun from time to time has struggled with that a little bit. How do you see the game playing out? What's your keys to the game, and then how do you see your take on how it all finishes?
I think one of the keys will just be, first, it'll be whether Will Fuller plays. And if he doesn't, if the Texans are still going to be able to take advantage of downfield throws, because we've seen the stats this week. Deshaun Watson is a lot better deep, obviously, with Fuller on the field. And now, to me, it's really interesting because Buffalo has not allowed those big chunk plays this season. I think of 20 yards passes 20 or more yards downfield, there's been no touchdown scored on them, and they have 5 interceptions. And so, to me, that's going to be the key. Can the Texans get chunk plays? Because if not, I think it's going to be a long day for this offense. I picked them to win, mostly because it's at home. And I think if Fuller plays, that'll make me more confident in that pick. But I think this should be a good game, and I think it'll be a close one on Saturday.
So, with your injury report, there's 5 questionable, as you tweeted out earlier today, Fuller being one of them. But Bradley Roby's the one that sticks out to me, as well as Jonathan Joseph, because from a secondary, we know that you know, how vital it is for them to be able to cover. And they do have some options where they can throw the long ball a little bit. You know, Allen likes to air it out a little bit. But of those 5 guys, are there anybody that you're really worried about? Is Fuller going to be someone that's going to be really questionable? Or is he a guy that they're going to, you know, Bill O'Brien is going to be out there? How useful is he going to be?
I think they're working really hard to get him ready to play. I think they're going to try to get him to play, but I sometimes laugh when Bill says it's a game time decision, but I do believe the Will Fuller decision they'll make after he warms up tomorrow. To me, the guy that of the questionables that I would think maybe doesn't play is Jordan Akins with a hamstring injury, because he wasn't on the injury report until Thursday, and he was limited on Thursday. So that usually tells me if someone is added late that they have a not as good of a chance to play.
You expect Roby and Joseph? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think those guys will play. But Akins, to me, that his late addition tells me that might actually really be questionable for this game.
Well, there you go. We appreciate you spending some time with us, as you always do, 3:30 on Fridays. Enjoy the game. We'll look forward to your coverage, and hopefully we'll be talking to you again next week.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys. Great talking to you.
There you go. Sarah Barshop, ESPN's beat writer for your Houston Texans. We got one segment to go on the show. We're going to put a bow on it next, then turn it over to the Blitz as Fred sits in for Barry to wrap up the week on an FYI Friday. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back to wrap things up on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's an FEF Friday, and F is for Fred, because Fred has very thankfully for us been standing by to fill in as Barry was under the weather. His voice was petering out, and so AJ came in and went to the pen. And Fred, we always love having you. It's always a good family experience to catch back up with you, so it's good to have you sitting in, even though you have to do a little longer day.
No, this is fun for me. I appreciate appreciate the opportunity, and you know, obviously I get to work with Nick a lot, but you know, you and I haven't done a show in probably since
I went through the audition process, basically, of working with everybody.
Yeah, so it's always fun, and like I said, I had some sports map stuff that I had to get done, and when I got it done, it was like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? Might as well jump in. So it all worked out great.
Absolutely did. Did you see that the AP All Pro team came out? Everybody talking about the fact that Christian McCaffrey's versatility had him fill 2 spots on the All-Pro team, 2 positions. So he was selected as a first-team running back and the top flex player in the voting by the 50-member nationwide media panel. The thing that stood out to me was DeAndre Hopkins, again, first team, 3rd time in doing so. He keeps racking up the numbers, 109 catches on the year, 2nd. He was a first team along with Thomas of the Saints. But you look at it, you know, he keeps putting up numbers like this, and you're going to start talking about him in the same breath as Andre Johnson and more based on the fact that he's been this effective for this long for this franchise.
I think he's already surpassed Andre Johnson in what he accomplished. And we'll see. I mean, he obviously has to do it a few more years, but, man, it's one thing to make Pro Bowls.
Right.
You and I can make Pro Bowls.
Absolutely.
But making the All-Pro team means you're one of the best in the league. And he deserves it. And the other receivers, Michael Thomas, I wouldn't have put somebody else over DeAndre as the second guy. And, you know, he's been fantastic throughout the course of his career. And I think people don't really appreciate sometimes just how good he is, because he hasn't had – when you watch him game in, game out, he's had some drops this year. He's had some games where he kind of disappeared. But then you look at his numbers for the whole season, and you're like, wow.
And that's
the thing that's so impressive about him.
You know, they did the stat right before the Monday night game against the Saints to start the season off, saying he didn't have a drop last year. And then right away in the game, he had a couple.
Yeah.
And it was inevitable it was going to happen. But when you think about all the things he brings to the table, he's always facing double teams. Obviously, he's the best receiver that's going to get the best of the other team's defense. But when you go on all those things and you say his hands are so incredible, that he makes catches that even as good as Andre was, I don't know that you're going to find a set of mitts anywhere close to what he brings to the table in terms of he'll go up in traffic and that 50-50 ball becomes like 70-30 because of his ability to bring it in with those hands.
Yeah, and you know, but the one negative is when Watson throws a lot of picks, it's usually because he's trying to force the ball to Hopkins, which I wish they'd do less of. But man, there are times when he takes over a game, like he did against the Titans in the fourth quarter, when they're double-teaming him the whole game, and all of a sudden he's like, okay, it's Hopkins time. That's what great players do. That's what Michael Thomas does.
Yeah.
That's whatever your position is as a skill player, there's a certain part of the game where you just take over. And that's what he's done for these guys this year, and I think he's well-deserving. I do think the McCaffrey thing's kind of stupid. I mean, if it's a team, then how can he play both positions?
And you're taking a spot from somebody else.
Yeah.
And that means a lot to a lot of players in this league. I'm with you. As long as he's on the first team somewhere, you don't need him filling two roles.
That's just kind of silly. But everybody else on that team is pretty impressive. There's no question.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, the thing that would concern me is Texans really only had one guy who was even sniffing these teams. Yeah, that'd be a little bit of a concern. For all the money you're paying Whitney Mercilus and Bernardrick McKinney for them to not even get second team.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, there was a lot of talk about Reader being a guy that should sneak into the Pro Bowl, but it's a whole different story than being a Pro Bowl than being all pro as a defensive lineman. And you're right. I mean, if the only guy they got is D-Hop, that's something that you got to look at when you start talking about the quality of players and the depth and everything that we were kicking around. The other thing that you mentioned that was interesting to me is I've said all along, look, he got 109 catches on the year, but Hopkins gets a majority of his in the fourth quarter. I'd like to see him get some more looks earlier in the game. And obviously a lot depends on the fact that if Fuller's healthy and he you know, he's a threat and Stills and those three receivers, if they're all on the field at the same time, then there should be ways to get DeAndre Hopkins open earlier and target him. But it just seems like he's your closer, but they don't use him enough in between the first three quarters.
I think they try. Teams also have to react to what you're doing. And when the Texans are at their best offensively, and this is what I want to see tomorrow and probably won't, if I were offensive coordinator, the one thing I wouldn't do is change the game plan every single week. I have some things that I do well, and I want those out there. I want the quick hits to the tight end. I want to throw Duke Johnson out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. You obviously have to try to establish a run. I want to do some misdirection. I love the little triple option where I can either hand off, roll out with Watson, or throw to the tight end. Those things you do really well. They should be in your game plan every single week. Establish those. Make teams react to them. That's going to open it up for Hopkins. It's going to open it up for Stills. And as far as Fuller is concerned, I think if you're depending on him, that's a real issue. I mean, he's had two games where he had a combined 300 yards. The one real good game against the Falcons, right, where he had over 200. The rest of the time when he's been out there, he's been ineffective. And if your offense is dependent on that, and if your offense is better when he's out there, that's a problem because...
But defensively, if he's out there, you have to respect him because, again...
Boy, I wouldn't.
It's been few and far between, but you know he can stretch the defense because he can blaze on the outside when you need a guy. And that's, again, to me, kind of piggybacking on what you said, the other thing that I'm looking for is balance. Just make sure that you're capable of running the game, running the football. That whether it's Hyde and Johnson in combination or one of them gets hot, but make sure you don't go away from the run and you stay steady with a good balance with the run. That's key to me. And the other thing to me is what you, one of the things you mentioned, which is you've got to keep getting the ball to the tight end because they have a good game and then it's almost like you completely go away from it. And it's, he's so much better, Watson is, when he's got his safety blankets and the tight end has always been effective for him.
They're also going to have to use Watson running the football. I want to see four or five design runs, not just the drop back, everybody's covered, take off. I want to see four or five design runs, especially in the playoffs. You don't, you know, we'll do the water boy thing. Last game of the season, can't hold anything back. But I'm not worried about getting people hurt in the playoffs. You run the plays that you need to win the game. And it'll be interesting to see because I don't think O'Brien has done that in past playoff games. And I think they're the same team that we see in the regular season. And you have to raise your game now. Your game has to go up a level. So for that to happen, that means more of Watson running the ball. Watson plays that are designed to work for him. I want to see some Gary Kubiak bootleg. And, you know, then it'll open it up for your receivers. And, you know, if I'm a defense, I don't even worry about Will Fuller. If he gets behind me, there's a good chance he's going to drop the ball anyway. And he hasn't looked good whenever, whatever it is that's bothering him, when he's out there, he just doesn't get open. And, you know, so if he's not healthy, then is he really, is that decoy really a threat for you? I think teams will figure that out pretty quickly. Well, and he's, especially the Bills have a really good secondary. And I think attacking that is a mistake. And I would just say, whatever you did against the Patriots, where you threw the ball over the middle to guys, you stayed away from Gilmore and guys like that, right, do that early. And then once those guys have to start helping in run support, or you have to start doubling the tight end or something silly like that, then those passes will be open. And if they do that, I think they'll be fine. And to me, the whole thing is, and I mentioned this yesterday on the show, Deshaun Watson has not played a good game since that Patriots game. And he has to play at a high level. They have to have a good game plan. If they do that and the offense shows up, the Bills can't beat them. If they bring their A game and the Bills bring their A game, the Bills can't beat the Texans.
Because, you know, you look at Allen, and look, for all the credit he gets for running the football, he's not a very effective passer. And the only thing that has worked for him is from time to time, John Brown will stretch the defense and he'll go long ball with him. But for the most part, it goes back to what you had said earlier on, which is you've got to contain Allen running the football, because we know for one thing, if for certain, they are going to run the football with some controlled runs for him, called runs for him, and the Texans have to get to the edge and they got to contain him.
And I put Bradley Roby on Brown and just say he's your guy, you follow him all over the field. And, you know, then I'd be a little concerned about Cole Beasley, because I'm not sure who they have that's going to work on him, especially if Jonathan Joseph is playing 10 yards off. Then Cole Beasley's going to get a lot of 5 and 6 yard catches. In a perfect world, we don't see Jonathan Joseph tomorrow. I mean, he had the interception against the Bucs, but let's face it, Winston was throwing interceptions to everybody.
Right.
But he has not been good this year, and he's been a liability more times than not. And it's kind of sad because you watch him and you see he still knows what he wants to do. It's just like me trying to play basketball now. I can see where the pass should go. I can see the move I should try to make, but I'm too slow and old to do it. And it's kind of sad, but if he's playing a lot of minutes tomorrow, I think that's a bad thing because they will attack him. And with Allen, with that arm he has, Joseph can't stay in front of guys even when he gives them 10-yard cushions. So.
Like you said, I don't want to see Jonathan Joseph anywhere near Brown, ever. Right. But, you know, overall, if we can see, even if it was Hargraves or Lonnie Johnson, anybody that's got a little bit more fleet of foot.
And Gary Conley, I think, is not a bad one to throw out there.
Okay. Well, you know what? You know what you do well, even if it's not basketball? It's filling in when in a pinch, and we really appreciate you.
Happy to do it anytime, boys. Anytime.
Well, thank you, sir. Have a great weekend. We appreciate you, and we appreciate Barry Laminack. Hopefully he gets better soon, and we'll see him healthy on Monday. But you all have a great weekend, everybody. We appreciate you listening every Monday through Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. on The Usual Suspects. For Nick and Fred, I'm Joel. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday on ESPN 97.5.
And I didn't know if they sniffed their own farts or not. Yeah, boy.